Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter and Kelly Jean Kelly. Later, John Russell and Alice Bryant will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, Prime Minister Theresa May said the attacker who killed three people near the British Parliament was born in Britain. And he was investigated by the country's intelligence agency, MI5, in relation to concerns about violent extremism. May added that there was no earlier information on the suspect's plan or his reason for carrying out the attack. Investigators believe that the attacker was influenced by Islamist ideology. Shortly after May spoke with members of the parliament, the Islamic State terrorist group claimed responsibility, saying the attacker was a soldier of Islamic State. On Wednesday, the attacker crashed an SUV into pedestrians near the Parliament building. The large vehicle killed two persons and injured many others. The attacker then stabbed a police officer to death before being fatally shot by another officer. The attack injured about 40 people, including visitors from South Korea, China, Germany, France, Romania, Greece, Ireland, Italy, and the United States. 29 people have been hospitalized. 7 are in critical or extremely serious condition. British police have arrested 8 people in connection with the attack. The arrests were carried out in London, Birmingham, and other parts of the country. Mark Rowley is Deputy Commissioner for London's Metropolitan Police Service. Rowley did not say how those arrested were linked to Wednesday's attack. He said the attacker acted alone and was inspired by international terrorism. As the British Parliament reopened for its normal meetings Thursday, May told lawmakers that it was an attack on free people everywhere. Yesterday, an act of terrorism tried to silence our democracy, but today we meet as normal, as generations have done before us, and as future generations will continue to do, to deliver a simple message: we are not afraid, and our resolve will never waver in the face of terrorism, she said. In Washington, the White House said President Donald Trump spoke with Prime Minister May and was briefed on the attack. Just days earlier, the United States and Great Britain banned larger electronic devices on direct flights from several nations in the Middle East and North Africa. Officials said that unspecified threats were the reason.
A recovery operation has raised the Sewol ferry, which sank off South Korea's southern coast almost 3 years ago. An official overseeing the operation said the ferry reached the water's surface shortly before 5 o'clock local time. 304 people, many of them high school students, died when the Sewol sank in April 2014. The sinking is considered one of South Korea's worst maritime disasters. It has been an issue of deep sadness, anger, and division. Families of the victims have called for the Sewol to be raised and for a more complete investigation of the sinking. The head of a group representing the victims' families, Yoo Kyung-gun, released a statement on Thursday. It urged the government to work on the recovery of the missing victims first. A Chinese salvage company raised the hull of the passenger ship, which sank in 40 meters of water near Jindo Island. An official of South Korea's Ministry of Oceans and Fisheries said it will take 12 to 13 days to bring the ship to the port of Mokpo. Recent efforts to raise the ship have been slowed by weather and strong waves. The Sewol was carrying 467 people on the day it left for the South Korean island of Jeju on April 16, 2014. Investigators say the ship was dangerously overloaded with goods, making it unbalanced. The ship overturned while trying to make a turn at high speed. Adding to the anger over the tragedy was the reported failure of the crew and officers to ensure the safety of the passengers. Crew members reportedly told many of the 250 teenagers who died while on a school trip to stay in their room. The Sewol's captain and crew members later left the ship. The captain was found guilty of gross negligence charges and sentenced to life in prison. 14 crew members were given sentences of up to 12 years for abandonment and violating maritime law. The rescue efforts of the South Korean Coast Guard were also criticized. The sinking led to a sharp drop in approval of the government of then-President Park Geun-hye. She was blamed for disappearing for 7 hours during the incident. She made no public statement while the ship sank. The public's trust in Park never fully recovered. The South Korean National Assembly voted to remove her from office last December. It noted Park's reaction to the sinking and her reported links to illegal payments to an organization controlled by her friend as reasons for its vote. The Constitutional Court voted to support the Assembly's decision earlier this month. A new presidential election is to take place on May 9th. I'm Mario Ritter.
A new public opinion study shows many Canadians are unhappy about people entering Canada illegally from the United States. Such border crossers are mostly people from the Middle East and Africa. Some say they traveled to Canada because they were afraid the U.S. government would return them to their home countries. News services report that the number of refugees entering Canada rose sharply in the first 2 months of 2017. In January and February, Canadian police caught over 1,000 people crossing into Canada without permission. In all of 2016, that number was just over 2,000. So far this year, about 5,500 people have requested Canada accept them as refugees. Only 20% of them have been stopped at the border. If the trend continues, more than 30,000 people will attempt to get refugee status in Canada this year. That would be 40% more than last year. Due to the surge of refugees, the Reuters news agency asked Canadians what they think of people who come into Canada without permission. The study found that many Canadians think the country will not be as safe as in the past if the foreigners are permitted to stay. About 1,000 people were questioned. Almost half said the migrants should be returned to the U.S. About the same number said they did not agree with the way Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is dealing with the issue. About 400 people said they thought migrants coming into Canada from the U.S. would make the country less safe. Last month, Reuters went to the small central border town of Emerson, Manitoba. The U.S. states of Minnesota and North Dakota are south of the town. Jamie French lives in Emerson. She says, last month, a group of 16 migrants came to the door of her house early in the morning. She said she was frightened. Emerson's emergency coordinator said, none of the migrants have caused any trouble so far. Some, however, have needed medical treatment after spending hours outside in freezing temperatures. The increasing numbers of people crossing into Canada can be costly for these border towns. For example, it costs Emerson $500 every time police call firefighters to help treat the health problems of migrants. Jacqueline Reimer runs a restaurant in Emerson. She has fed some of the migrants for free. She says she wants them to feel welcome, but she also says she wonders why the Canadian government does not do more to help Canada's homeless citizens. Some Canadians also expressed worry that even larger numbers of people will try to cross the border as the weather warms. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
The Parliament of South Africa may soon consider a law that would permit limited trade and export of rhinoceros horn for personal use. The government proposed the law earlier this year. It accepted comments about the measure for 30 days. That period ended on March 10th. The measure has some supporters, but animal rights groups strongly oppose it. The government wants to permit domestic trade in rhino horn and individual exports of two rhino horns at one time. The horns must be for personal use only. There would be strict controls on the trade. South Africa's Department of Environmental Affairs said records would be kept about the buyers and sellers of rhino horns. Officials would keep genetic information about each horn. Domestic trade in rhino horn was banned in South Africa in 2009. But two independent rhino breeders won a court case challenging the ban in 2015. The government appealed the ruling, but it was not successful. So the Department of Environmental Affairs proposed the new law. Independent rhino breeders who sought to cancel the ban are happy about the proposed law. Pelham Jones is the chairman of the Private Rhino Owners Association. He said the trade would be supervised by wildlife officials and would not harm living rhinos.
The benefit of domestic trade is it will allow now a partial supply of rhino horn from existing stockpiles, in other words, no injury to existing live animals whatsoever, to be traded in South Africa, to be exported with a CITES permit.
But opponents say all trade in rhino horn should be banned. They believe even limited trade will cause criminal groups to become involved. Joe Shaw is the manager of the World Wildlife Fund's South Africa Rhino Program.
We don't believe that the necessary control mechanisms are currently in place at an international, national, or provincial level to enable law enforcement and permitting staff to be able to regulate this legal domestic trade alongside the existing levels of illegal trade in horn.
International trade in rhino horn has been banned since 1977. Jones says there is no proof that the international ban has protected rhinos. He says legal trade will help the animals. He argues that many reserves where rhinos are protected have sold their rhino populations because of security costs. Jones notes that the sales will help pay for some of the costs of keeping and protecting rhinos. A rhino horn can sell for as much as $23,000. The South African government reports that every year the country loses about 1,000 rhinos to poachers. These criminals sell the horns to people in Asian countries, where the horns are used to treat some medical problems. However, there is no scientific evidence that rhino horns can help someone with such problems. I'm John Smith.
This is What's Trending Today. A first-round tennis match at the Miami Open in Florida was delayed on Wednesday due to a surprise visitor. Jiří Veselý from the Czech Republic was playing against Tommy Haas of Germany when he noticed an iguana. The large lizard seemed to enjoy his view from the top of the scoreboard at courtside. Veselý asked the umpire to stop play and try to remove the iguana. The umpire told Veselý he would not stop the match unless the iguana ran onto the playing surface. He said, "If it's like that on the scoreboard, I don't think it's going to bother you, Jiří." Veselý disagreed. The umpire said, "Forget about it. It's not a dangerous animal." During their conversation, Haas, a former second-ranked player in the world, went over to the iguana and took a selfie. The fans cheered. The television commentator said, "You do not see this very often." Haas received a lot of comments about his photo on Instagram. One person wrote, "Man, I'm going to hate it when you are truly done playing." The iguana did become a distraction after all. People who work at the tennis stadium tried to catch the iguana by the tail and by throwing a towel over it. But that did not work. The iguana ran across the court to the other side and climbed onto the scoreboard. "It's scampering everywhere," said the commentator. "You don't expect to see this," he added. Everyone kept laughing and cheering. The iguana was finally captured and taken outside the stadium. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Imagine you are in an American city. While standing along the street, you hear someone asking for directions.
What's the best way to get to the airport?
Continue straight and take the second right. It will only take about 5 minutes.
Thanks. I'm running late. I hope I can find a place to park. Take care.
Bye.
Our report today is not about asking for traffic directions. Instead, it is about another useful subject, infinitives in everyday speech. In this Everyday Grammar, we are going to explore infinitives and the words that they often modify.
An infinitive is the base form of the verb. Sometimes the word to appears before the base form. The word serves as a sign of the infinitive. Unlike other verbs, infinitives do not have a tense, something to express time or the length of an action. Infinitives can act as adjectives. In other words, they can describe or provide more information about a noun. English has many possible noun and infinitive combinations. You would never be able to memorize all of them. However, the good news is this. In everyday speech, only a few nouns are generally modified by infinitives.
Nouns that suggest objects are often modified by infinitives. The three most common examples are the nouns thing, stuff, and a lot. All three words are inexact, so English speakers often need to use adjective phrases to clarify their meaning. Here is an example. Imagine you hear someone say unkind words. You could say to them, "That wasn't a nice thing to say." The infinitive to say gives more information about the noun thing. The infinitive is acting as an adjective. It helps to define the word thing. In this situation, thing means hurtful words. The word stuff is also unclear. Here's an example. Imagine you are invited to a party. After inviting you, your friend might say this.
"Oh, I forgot to tell you. It would be great if you brought stuff to snack on."
Here, the infinitive to snack on tells us about the noun stuff. If the sentence ended with stuff, the meaning might not be clear to the listener. But by adding the infinitive, the meaning becomes clear. Your friend is talking about food. When taking leave of a friend, you might say, "Sorry, I have to go now. I have got a lot to do."
Three other nouns are commonly modified by infinitives in everyday speech. They are the words time, place, and way. Time and place have a clearer meaning than some of the other nouns we have discussed. Most American parents have probably told their children, "It's time to go to bed." Many tired, hungry travelers have probably said, "This looks like a great place to eat." The word way, meaning the method in which something is done, is often used when asking questions or giving advice. So, a student might ask a teacher, "Is there a better way to write this sentence?"
You might notice that there is something missing from our examples. One feature of adjectival infinitives, the technical term for today's program, is that the subject is not stated. The subject is understood. It is the object in a prepositional phrase. This information comes from Martha Kohn, an expert on English grammar. Consider our earlier example. That wasn't a nice thing to say. The understood or unstated subject is the word you. You is the object of an understood prepositional phrase for you. The entire sentence, if it had all of these elements, would read,
"That wasn't a nice thing for you to say."
Our other example, "This seems like a great place to eat," could become, "This seems like a great place for me, or for us, to eat." Now you can understand why native speakers sometimes do not always state the subject. It makes the sentence longer, and it might not add much information.
Think back to the exchange you heard at the beginning of this program.
What's the best way to get to the airport?
Continue straight and take the second right. It will only take about 5 minutes.
Thanks. I'm running late. I hope I can find a place to park. Take care.
Bye.
You will recognize that two of the nouns we discussed, way and place, were modified by infinitives. The first speaker said, "What's the best way to get to the airport?" The speaker could have said, "What's the best way for me to get to the airport?" But as you have heard, English speakers will leave out the subject when the meaning is clear.
The nouns and infinitives we have studied today can be used in almost any situation, with the exception of stuff. While it would be acceptable to use stuff when talking to friends or family, you would not use it when speaking with someone important, especially if you did not know the person well. Stuff is not an offensive word, but it is an informal one. The next time you are reading, watching, or listening to something in English, try to notice the noun plus infinitive structures we have discussed today. Ask yourself how speakers use these structures in different situations. Try using these structures whenever you get the chance. Remember, practice is the best way to improve. And now it's time to take a break. Until next week, I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.